My guest this time is Mark Morano, founding editor of ClimateDepot.com. He is also the author of the brand new book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, in which he dissects the supposedly unassailable arguments of the climate change community. And Mark, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Greg.
Well, let's just start with the title briefly and the fact that we now have to call it climate change instead of global warming. What do they achieve with a more ambiguous name?
Well, actually, in the book, I detail how they shifted from global warming because it sounded nice, warm, and fuzzy, and also the fact that the temperatures weren't warming. You know, we had been and still are essentially in a statistical standstill in temperatures since the late 90s. So what they try to do is switch it over to extreme weather. In other words, every drought, flood, hurricane, tornado, and yes, blizzard was now a result of global warming, what they expected. So that was one of the shifts in the name of climate change, because then they could cover everything and anything, including an increase in prostitution. That's global warming. Car vehicle theft's gone up. That's global warming. Barroom brawls. That's global warming. A bad coffee crop. That's global warming. And this is what they did now. That's climate change. Everything's shifted over to the name of climate change, and they blamed everything on it. And I have a lot of fun in the book with that. I go through the absurdities. Going back to the 19th century, by the way, where the indigenous Aborigines of Australia blamed the changing weather conditions on the introduction of the white man in Australia. So there's always been myths and superstition. Going back to the Salem witch trials, I actually go in here, witches used to be blamed for altering the weather, crop failures. Now they blame our SUVs. And I actually have a Princeton physicist saying that the women were condemned as witches by judges largely educated at Harvard. Nothing's changed, is what he quipped in the book. Essentially, we have a bunch of educated elite in academia trying to blame every and every possible malady on climate change.
I believe the Syrian civil war was also blamed on climate change somehow.
It was.
And so let's talk about the fact that no matter what happens, their projections are always right. The problem is that going back to the early 90s and more recently, their projections have clearly not panned out. So how do they explain that?
Very good. Well, actually, one of the ways they explain that they're always right, as you just said, is they have opposite predictions. In other words, if you bet for both teams to win the Super Bowl, you're going to be a winner no matter what. They've done that. I mean, they can go back on snow in particular. Global warming will cause less snow. That was what the United Nations said. That's what the United Nations scientists said. That's what the New York Times said. That's what's in all these studies. But they had a few studies that said global warming will cause an increase in snow. So they predicted global warming will cause more snow and less snow. So now they can come out and say, hey, we predicted it. They predicted global warming will cause less lightning strikes, more lightning strikes. Now, no matter what happens, they predicted it. More malaria, less malaria. More hurricanes, less hurricanes. I go through the book, all the double predictions where they literally have themselves covered. If you were a bookie, you would be so happy because you'd always be a winner. Everybody's a winner, as they say at the craps tables in Vegas. So this is what they've done. They make opposite predictions. They're always right. But I do confront in the book, I have exclusive interview with the UN lead author, and I confront him about his failed predictions of 20 years ago. And his answer is astounding. He basically just says, well, I may not have got that right, but I couldn't have predicted the following. In other words, if you say many bad things will happen, here's a list of five. None of those bad things happened 20 years later, but you say, oh, yeah, but all these other bad things happened, and I told you bad things were happening, so I may not have got. So it's almost like now we're talking about the level of a palm reader on the boardwalk, where you're just saying, you know, all these bad things will happen, so anything bad that happens vindicates you. That's not falsifiable science.
Another thing you attack here, Chapter 3, the supposed consensus of the scientific community and the specific number of 97%. You go through CNN, New York Times, Al Gore, everybody, John Kerry, 97% all agree with this. And Tom Friedman says the conservatives like to go with the 3% just to be different, and that's essentially making them Trotskyites. You say that the 97% number is pretty much garbage. How did they get there, and why does everybody believe it?
Well, it's a number that they were looking for a statistic to support. Back in the early 90s, Al Gore was saying, all scientists agree, there's unanimous agreement. So they needed studies. So they started cranking out these sociology students and others at different universities, cranked out a couple different studies claiming 97% of scientists or 97% of studies all supported it. It turns out one of the studies that they claim 97% of scientists wasn't even 97 scientists. It wasn't 87 scientists. It was 77 scientists And here's the kicker. We don't even know who these 77 anonymous scientists are. We don't know their university affiliation. We don't know their expertise. We just know that we have to trust them. They got a survey that started with tens of thousands, and they whittled it down. They tortured the data till they got what they wanted. Another study was reviewed by a UN lead author, Dr. Richard Toll, who's in the book, who's now turned against the UN. He studied this and testified before Congress on his results and had his study published in peer-reviewed journal. And he said the 97% number is, quote, pulled from thin air, unquote. There's no credible statistics to back it up whatsoever. In other words, it's a complete fabrication designed as a talking point so people don't have to think or argue or come up with facts. They can just repeat lines. And it's literally inspired by the old toothpaste ads in the 1970s, you know, 4 out of 5 dentists recommend. It's that kind of thinking where it's like, oh, how could I not buy that toothpaste? All these dentists recommend it. How could you not believe this? All 97% of scientists agree. This is how they get you. In the book, first of all, the book's endorsed on the back cover by Nobel Prize winning scientists in physics. By the way, the UN, they'll always tout the Nobel Prize winning UN panel. They won the Nobel Peace Prize, and it was for political activism, not science. And it was a peace prize, not an award in science. I actually have award-winning Nobel scientists in science prizes in the book. And I also have many UN scientists who turned against the United Nations.
We're talking with Mark Morano. The book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. So, Mark, it begs the question, why, given the fact that there's so little credible science behind some of this, is it so widely accepted and disseminated? Is it largely because members of our media just want it to be true, or do they just accept it because it's kind of hard to understand climate science, so they just assume these people are right?
No, it's an agenda that goes back for many decades, probably in the 1960s, where the media fed this kind of alarmism. They're never going to give it a fair shake. If you go back, and I do with Paul Ehrlich's overpopulation bomb of the 1960s, the media just love the gloom and doom. It helps sell newspapers. It creates crisis, conflict. It scares people. You know, Johnny Carson was part of the pop culture, not saying he necessarily personally agreed, but he had John Holdren on as a regular Tonight Show contributor on talking about resource scarcity, running out of oil, into the 1980s. I recently profiled him and Paul Ehrlich in 1980, warning that we'd be out of oil in a few years. And so this is what sold. So the media today loves this kind of alarmism, and now it's become part of the politically left-wing agenda of the mainstream media. So, of course, they eat it up even more. They won't even acknowledge skeptics, and when they do, I actually have a whole chapter, an ebook chapter that's available, that goes through and talks about all the media smearing climate skeptics as comparable to Holocaust deniers. And that is what they try to do. They just want to shut down debate, and the reason is it interferes with the agenda. I profile in the book the war, capitalism versus the climate, planned recessions to fight global warming. This is their agenda. And I go back to the 1970s and I show that even different environmental scares had the same solution: wealth redistribution, central planning, and global governance. These are the exact phrases they've been using for 40 years trying to promote the solution to the crisis which they run. And global warming is just the most recent crisis that they're using. It was originally the overpopulation scare, resource scarcity, global cooling scare, the Amazon rainforest scare. That used to be the cause in the 80s and 90s with the rainforest concerts and Hollywood celebrities. And then that all faded, and now they're all in on the latest scare, global warming. And they're using it, in the words of the United Nations climate chief, which I interviewed for the book. She actually says that we want a centralized transformation that will make life on planet Earth very different in order to fight global warming. That's what we're selling on to, what we're buying into when we sign on to the UN Paris Agreement.
So it's all about control.
It's about control, and it's about empowering the United Nations bureaucrats, and it's about their agenda. I actually quote in the book, I did an exclusive interview with former Czech President Václav Klaus. And he grew up under Soviet communism. He was part of the Eastern Bloc countries. He says since the fall of the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc, the greatest threat since the fall is what he terms ambitious environmentalism from the climate agenda. He considers them the greatest threat to liberty, this whole climate agenda. And this is a man who grew up under that agenda.
Yeah, President Klaus, former President Klaus, has definitely been, I don't say a lone voice on that issue, but he's certainly not had a ton of friends, but he has been consistent on that issue. Two quick topics before we let you go here, Mark. Number one, you talk about this in the book about somehow carbon dioxide became a pollutant and to some people a poison, and you point out the work of the great scientist Pat Michaels, who says the temperatures were rising long before the CO2 levels were rising. So why did the left latch on to CO2 as the villain here?
That's a very good question. It seems like a very odd thing, an odorless, tasteless gas essential for human life, also for greening the planet Earth. We inhale oxygen as humans. We exhale carbon dioxide. I think one of the reasons they chose carbon dioxide is, first of all, the theory was postulated that more CO2 would equal a warming world back in about 1890s, and I go into the details of that in the book. And I think what happened is it's so easy to just – essentially, you can't prove or really disprove it, because no matter what happens, you can always sort of claim, oh, this is a result of global warming. And back in the – I actually profile in the book, in 1941, a University of Cincinnati professor – blames warm weather for creating a more docile public and easily commanded, and he blamed the warm weather at the time. And we were warmer in the 1930s in the U.S. than we are now. All the heat wave records are still on the EPA website, is significantly warmer than we were in any time recent, including now, that it caused the rise of Hitler and Mussolini because people were more docile. And then I actually profile a few years later, Hitler was saved from his assassination attempt because of the heat. They had to move the meeting to a different room, and the bomb that went off that tried to kill Adolf Hitler was ended up being under a heavy table that it wouldn't have been had it not been a heat wave, and they moved it. So global warming created Hitler, global warming saved Hitler. They picked carbon dioxide, I think, because it's so ubiquitous, it's everywhere, and it can be blamed for just about anything. It's not really disprovable, and it's an easy scare to just keep doing, and that's what they're doing now. They're blaming every heat wave, flood, wacky social events on global warming. You can't even escape it now when you die, and I get into that. You think when you're dead you can finally stop hearing about from the United Nations, Al Gore, on global warming? Wrong. It will chase you to the grave. They're now saying that corpses are thawing out in the permafrost and releasing strange pathogens. We're coming up with new diseases. So even the dead aren't safe from global warming. It's also allegedly decaying mummies faster in South America because of the rising humidity due to global warming. I mean, they come up with anything and everything. It's a great theory because, again, it doesn't have strict science standards, and it's just so – when there's hundreds of factors that influence global temperature and you're trying to say it's one, carbon dioxide is the control knob, very hard to prove, and also equally hard to disprove other than saying it's nonsense and there's all these other factors overwhelm it.
Last topic, and it's on emotions, and you have this in the book as well, about either you care about your children or you don't, Mark, and if you do – then you're going to take this seriously, and you're going to make the sacrifices necessary in order to make sure they have a survivable planet, they and their offspring as well. So what do you make of the kids being used as the bargaining chip here?
Well, I think I have a whole chapter on children indoctrination, and it goes in deep. It talks all about what they're learning in school. It details the Common Core curriculum. It talks about the Weather Channel's involvement. I even have the Weather Channel founder, who, by the way, did the foreword for the book, John Coleman, the Weather Channel founder. And also he excoriates his old network in the book, attacking them for child propaganda. But I also detail how children now are being used as pawns as young as elementary school in these various climate lawsuits by activist scientists and environmental groups, and they're being used for PR purposes by, you know, parents that are allowing it, and by school systems, and by environmentalists, and court systems that are allowing it. So kids, and I detail Hollywood's involvement. We have Leonardo DiCaprio actually saying, you got to get kids young to make them climate activists. We have Al Gore's producer, Lori David, in the book saying openly, I want you to grow up to be activists. They want to get kids young. They want them activists. They want to propagandize them. And I openly talk about interview scientists who say this is absolute brainwashing of children. They're taught from a very young age that there is no dissent on this issue, that not only is there no dissent, but no dissent is allowed. You are going to be called an idiot. You are going to be disenfranchised. You will have no career unless you toe the line. This is very far from science. One scientist I interview actually was called a heretic after she reversed her view and became a skeptic. Those are not the words of science. Those are the words of religion, heretic.
Real quickly, I know I said the last question was the last question, but who wins this fight and why? It seems like the deck stacked against folks looking at this from an objective point of view. So it seems like you're confident in this book that ultimately that your side's going to win. But why?
Well, I'm not 100% confident. Actually, in the end, the last chapter is called The Way Forward, and it details what President Trump has done. And the problem is, Trump hasn't done a great pushback for the reasons. He pulled out of Paris. He overturned the regulations on the coal plants and the EPA. But he didn't get into the things beyond the cost, even national sovereignty. He needed to go after the science head on. He needed a science czar to replace Obama's science czar. And he needed someone pushing back on everything with great credentials. And they opted not to do that. And so what's happened by not doing that, it's given free rein to everyone saying, oh, they just care about, you know, economics and they don't care about saving the planet. Instead of going after, you know, the head of the fish and talking about this is nonsense, this is not scientifically accurate. So I actually say in the book, Trump's presidency could just be a blip in this, because if you look, a President Romney, a President McCain would have kept us in the Paris Agreement. In fact, Mitt Romney, to the day Donald Trump pulled us out last June, was begging Trump to stay in. Republican nominees and Republican senators and typically don't want to take on the climate agenda. So I don't know how confident I am going forward, even though the truth is clearly on our side. And I have a lot of fun pointing that out. In the book, I mean, the book is an entertainment, humorous book, first and foremost. Don't make no mistake about it. This is not a boring textbook. This is for parents and for anyone in the public who wants to debate, and parents who want ammunition as their kids get indoctrinated. But I'm not 100% confident going forward, because they have the media, academia, unbelievable government funding. They have the United Nations. They have political correctness, meaning they've intimidated and silenced dissenters, both in our scientific world and in academic world and in the student world and in the media world and in the political world. So they have many things in their favor, and they are all in on this, and they are going to keep pushing, and they have an agenda. And if, at the very least, if global warming were to fade, they would replace it with another environmental scare at some point with the same solutions.
Mark, we've barely scratched the surface. Again, the book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. Mark is also the founding editor of ClimateDepot.com. Congratulations on the book, Mark, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Greg.
Absolutely. Mark Morano, again, ClimateDepot.com, the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.